We have been studying about mental purification or purification of mind for the past few months. And the essence of what we have studied so far is that our mind has several impurities, some of which we are born with, some negative tendencies, and others we acquire over this lifetime. And the goal of spiritual progress is to purify the mind, remove these negativities like anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, likes and dislikes, desires. And unless you do that, any spiritual progress is not possible. When we meet saints and great teachers, we see that they have that. They have to a great extent conquered their ego, their selfishness, and they express spontaneous love for all. That's what we see in the lives of Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya, Guru Nanak, all these great saints, Swami Chinmayananda, how their whole life was an expression of their love, spontaneous love for all of mankind. Saint Francis even used to call to animals, even dangerous wolves would come and talk to him. So, but you and I, we are still on this spiritual journey, and we say, my mind has so many negativities, I can't do anything about it. I have to live with my mind. Or I blame the world that because of so-and-so I got angry, or because of so-and-so I got likes and dislikes. But we have seen that great saints also had the same mind. They also had the same world. How were they able to overcome their negativities? With right knowledge, with the right understanding, and applying that knowledge in their life. So we also want to do that. Last 2 weeks, we saw the consequences of not conquering your tendencies, because with likes and dislikes, I like and I dislike and I divide. These I love, these I hate, these are my enemy. And we constantly create agitation, discomfort mentally. So today onwards, we will now start the path of cure. How am I to cure my mind? The next 4 or 5 weeks will be the heart of this book, that is how to purify my mind. So we'll do verse number 18, page 34, verse 18.
Upayastu pura prokto, yastu pura prokto, naradena yudhishthiram. Chitta-dosha-nivrityartham, shreyase-chasmaramitam.
Smaramitam, I remember that the author of this book, who is none other than Swami Tejomayananda, who is the worldwide head of the mission at this moment, and we call him Guruji because he is a teacher. So he has written this text. So he says, I remember. What do I remember? That this teaching was given upaya. Upaya means a means to purify the mind. Pura prokto, long time ago, thousands of years ago, proktaha was given by who? By Narada. And who was Narada? He was the guru. I'll talk a little bit about him, and was given to Yudhishthiram. Yudhishthir was the student. So the teacher gave this knowledge to the student thousands of years ago, but it is still valid today. And what was the purpose of the knowledge? Chitta dosh. Chitta dosh means the impurities of the mind, the negativities of the mind, nivrityartham, to completely destroy. So through this knowledge, one can completely destroy the impurities of the mind. And why should we do that? Because it is shreyas. It is good for me. That's what the teacher says, and that's why I remember it. And that's why the teacher is sharing it with all of us in this book. So the next 4 verses are the actual teachings, but today we'll just concentrate on this particular verse. So he says this knowledge, this method was given long time ago by Narada to Yudhishthira. Narada is the guru and Yudhishthira is the student. Now, who was Narada? Narada, they said, was the son of the creator himself. You know, in our mythology, we believe there are three aspects of God. The creator, which we call Brahma, Vishnu, the sustainer, and Shiva, the destroyer. So somebody gives birth to us, somebody then takes care of us while we are living. Not only us, but takes care of the whole universe. And then at the time of death, there is a third aspect of God, which takes us away. So the creator, Brahmaji, his own son was Narada, and he was a great saint. He was a very accomplished. He had knowledge not only of spirituality, but all the sciences. He knew about music, he knew about grammar, he knew about dance, he knew mathematics, he knew sciences. All the knowledge that was available at that time, he knew. He had studied all the scriptures. And it is said he was such an advanced saint that he could, sitting here, with his subtle body, he could travel all the worlds. He could see what was happening in heaven, even in the higher heavens where Vishnu was. He could travel to the lower worlds, all different parts. And there are people, even there is one lady I know right now, who actually can travel with her when she is in meditation. She actually travels to subtle worlds. And she has told me things. She's not even an Indian, but she has described people that she has seen. She said, I saw two men walking with a bow and arrow, and that is Ram and Lakshman. And he says, I saw a young boy running around with a flute. And she did not know that that was Krishna, but she said, I have seen. She said, I saw a man sitting in meditation. So she has seen all the gods and goddesses of Hindus, but she's not even Indian. So there are people who in their subtle body can actually travel through the various worlds. So Naradji had that ability. He was also a great teacher. And Yudhishthir, who was the student, is, of course, those who are from India are familiar with that. But those of us who are studying Bhagavad Gita on Sunday morning know that there were two groups. There were the Pandavas, who were the good cousins, and then the Kauravas, who were the evil. And the evil cousins had actually stolen the kingdom and mistreated, and they were so corrupt that the whole country was going downhill. And then the good cousins, the five brothers, had to actually ask for the kingdom, and it was not only for their kingdom, but it was for the benefit of that nation, because the whole country was suffering. Because when the rulers are corrupt and wicked, then the whole country suffers. And so there is a battle initially, because they don't want to settle, they don't want to give it, and so the battle occurs. And then of course the good people triumph, because Lord Krishna, who was at that time incarnated on earth as a human, he actually helped the good side to win. So the oldest brother of them, of the good brothers, the good cousins, was Yudhishthir, who was the embodiment of Dharma. He was said to be Dharmaraj. He was the embodiment of everything good. All good qualities he had. He was always truthful, very kind, very compassionate. But he still felt, even though he had no impurities in his mind, but he said, I still need to go to a teacher and ask, how am I to purify my mind? Now, why would he do that? Because as long as we are living in this human body and have this human mind, one has to be very alert, because the mind can slip any minute and go back. We are going along fine, and then somebody cuts us off, or somebody says something at home, or somebody says something in the office, and immediately my mind gets disturbed, gets angry. So he approaches a teacher and says, I want to learn how to purify my mind. I thought I might talk for a couple of minutes about the word guru. Guru is we use a lot, and guru is somebody who is accomplished, who is very knowledgeable, and generally guru is used in terms of a spiritual teacher. Though nowadays they say, he's a computer guru or he's a software guru. It has been, extended to everything, which is okay. There's no problem with that. But the word guru is broken up into gu and ru. Gu is darkness, and ru means one who removes. So guru is one who removes my darkness. And what is the darkness? Darkness is not, putting on the light, but the darkness of ignorance. Because right now I am ignorant about what I should do, what is my purpose in life, where am I going. For worldly knowledge, we have so many books, Seven Laws of Success, How to Win Friends and Influence People, All the universities are telling me how to be a successful businessman or a manager or a computer programmer or a doctor or an engineer or a teacher. The universities, the colleges, and then when you go out into the business world, then there are all these seminars where you can learn how to be a successful this and that. But how to be successful in managing my own mind, nobody teaches us. No college will teach you, no university, no high school. And what is my purpose in life? Why am I here? Why have I taken human birth? What is this world? What is my relationship with the world? Who is the one who created this world? Only spirituality, only religion answers that. So guru is a spiritual teacher that we can approach when we need knowledge. And knowledge is required in anything. You want to learn how to play golf. What do they say? Find a pro and have him teach you lessons. You want to learn science or chemistry or mathematics, they say go to university. Either go to the college or get online and learn. You want to learn cooking, your mother, you know, she will sit down and teach you. Okay, take this. But in spirituality, we feel, I don't need a guru. I know what to do. But we need a guide more so in the spiritual world than in the material world. Then he says, Shreyase. It is for my benefit. Now this word Shreyas is a beautiful word. We discussed it in Sunday also in the Bhagavad Gita because it happened to come in the same verse on Sunday. Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasat and so on. So the word Shreya means what is good for me and it is opposed to Preya. Preya means what I enjoy. Shreya, what is good, and Preya, what I enjoy. And it is covered in quite much detail in a book in the office called Kathopanishad, which is one of the beautiful Upanishads, which tells us very well. Part of that, of course, is this. So, it's like I'm hungry. So, what do? I leave from this class and I go to a McDonald's and I get a super-sized burger with a super-sized fries, super-sized drink. Then on my way home, I stop at Rosemary's Creamery and pick up a super-sized ice cream. So that is called prayer. I enjoy that. That is prayer. That is, I enjoy that. Ah, then I'm full. Then I can go home and just sit in front of the TV, you know, and don't do anything the rest of the night. But prayer is what is good for me. I decide, okay, I'm going to be healthy. So from now on, I'm going to eat healthy. I'm going to, you know, eat the right kind of food with protein and fiber and a balanced diet in moderation. Not that one should not enjoy, but I'm going to enjoy in moderation. I'm going to exercise while the other guy, you know, he's a couch potato. He wants to sit on Saturday morning. I have my bag of potato chips and my six pack of beer. Ah, life is heaven and I can watch all the sport. So that is prayer and Shreya. Prayer is what I enjoy. And Shreya is what is good for me. Preya is what I enjoy. And Shreya is what is good for me. So here the teacher says that this knowledge that I get from the scriptures is something that is good for me. And that's why I am sharing it with you all. Then he says, Maramitam, I remember. Now what do we mean by remember? Remember is that say you went to a spiritual lecture or you went to a good teacher who is teaching or a Swami or somebody. And while you are sitting there, your attention is fully on the words. You are at that time, your attention is not wandering anywhere. You are saying, I want to remember what I am listening to. Or you may be reading a book and at that time your attention is on the topic which is for my good. So that is one where I listen and with the full attention where when I want to remember what I have heard, I do not want to go out and then somebody says, what did the teacher teach? You say, well, something he spoke about, you know, something about spirituality. I should remember exactly what was said. The second part of remember is that I should then recollect that in my silent moment when I'm sitting at home, not doing anything. Then I should have the ability to recollect what I had heard. and I should re-remember it. That's why they say remember. Again, I should remember so that by listening carefully, by thinking about it, and by remembering it again, it then becomes firm, that knowledge becomes firm, and then only can that knowledge translate into my worldly life. Otherwise, that, you know, you listen to something, it goes in one ear, out the other, or it goes from the speaker's mouth to the notebook and then never goes anywhere else. So it has to be applied, it has to be remembered, and only it can be done with the full attention. So that is the aspect of remember. Then I have to translate that into right thinking. Now, what do we mean by right thinking? Most of the time, when we are thinking about the world, we say, okay, this problem, that problem, this problem, that problem. How can I get more money? How can I get a better job? How can I be more successful? How can I have more friends? How can I have a better boyfriend? So all our thinking is on worldly things. Even if you ask the so-called very successful people, managers, you know, what is the right thing to do? What is the right decision to take? So they say, let me think about it. And then the managers will not give you an answer right away. What they will do, they will call a meeting. And what is meeting? Me eating. That is that is all it is. They have a 10 or 20 people committee who get together and they have a beautiful meal, you know, at the company expense at some nice resort. Or they go for a weekend, you know, they go for a weekend retreat. And they come back with no conclusion. Why? Because the whole purpose of the meeting is just to eat, you know, to have a good time. So unless you have the right knowledge, it does not change your thinking. So right knowledge is what is required. Everywhere in life, talking about right knowledge, there was this lady who was walking along the path. And there was a building under construction. And suddenly a voice came from behind. Don't step forward. A brick will fall on your head. So she got startled. She stopped. And a second later, a huge brick fell from that construction right in front of her. If she had stepped one, you know, would have hit her head and she probably would have died or at least got a big injury. So she was so thankful. Then she walked a little and she came to a sidewalk and she was going to step off because, you know, it was the crosswalk. And the voice says, don't step off the sidewalk. You will get killed. What? And she just stopped for a moment and this car came, you know, 70 miles an hour around the corner and missed her by inches. And she said, oh, if I had stepped off the curb, I would have been dead. She looked around. There was nobody. So she says, who are you? So that the voice is a female voice. She says, I am your guardian angel. So she says, you are? She says, yeah. He says, where were you the day I got married? So she had the right knowledge, but at the wrong time. So the right knowledge is that which leads to right thinking. And as I said before, right knowledge cannot be obtained except through the spiritual literature. When you read the Bible or the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita or the Guru Granth Sahib or some beautiful text like this, which is then can be translated. Our masters, our gurus, our teachers, our prophets have brought this knowledge, which is the highest knowledge, which they have acquired in their meditation or in their contact with the higher spiritual self. They have then brought this knowledge for the rest of us. And then there have been other teachers who have then translated. A lot of these works were in Sanskrit or in Latin or in Greek, or the language is so ancient that it is very difficult to understand. And that's why we are always grateful that there are so many teachers and masters who are then able to interpret and simplify and make this knowledge available to us. So what this knowledge does is teaches me how I should think, what I should think, and how I should think, and how this particular thinking can change my direction of my life, my behavior. Because at this moment, the whole world is running in one direction, you know, materialism, acquire more, get more, you know, if you can't get it, steal from somebody else, or if you have power, use it. You can occupy another's country, you can take over another's business, you can, you know, get a job and cut somebody's throat, or, you know, pull somebody's legs and out under them. And so there is a cutthroat business. That's what they say, you know, it is a rat race. So somebody said it very beautifully. They said, in the rat race, if you are winner, if you are the champion, you will still remain a rat. If you want to get out of being a rat, then get out of this rat race and get out of this mad pursuit of materialism. We are not saying that you should not have a house and a car and a job. Yeah, that is all, of course, necessary. I have to have that for me to be comfortable, for my family to be comfortable, for my retirement and all that. But there is another aspect of life which we totally ignore, which we totally forget. And that is my spiritual self. That is my spiritual nature. And that is blind to us. And people either don't even think about it, or if somebody approaches them and says, you know, you need to read this book, they say, after 65, after I retire. Right now, I am so busy. And you ask him, what are you busy? He's surfing the net. You know, for hours, he's just watching TV, or, you know, just watching sports, or talking to somebody, or texting, or chatting, or blogging. Can't even keep track of all these newer and newer modes of communication. But he doesn't have time to think about who I am, what is my goal, what is my purpose. So they say that when you approach a teacher with the right attitude, the attitude to the teacher has to be an attitude of humility. If you go to a teacher with arrogance, you can never learn. And that's why our word, the Upanishad, which is the highest teaching in the scriptures, says the Upa, Ni, and Shat means, Upa means near, Ni means sit, no, Ni means below, and Shat means sit. So they say, go to a teacher and sit near him, but below him. So approach a teacher, sit close to the teacher so you can acquire the knowledge, not far away, not on the internet, but personally approaching a teacher is very important, and sit below him. Below him means with an attitude of humility that I want to learn. And then and only then you can get the right knowledge which can transform your life. And the final point which I often bring up is that the Lord's grace is absolutely essential. Without the Lord's grace, you can't even take a step. Just the fact that I'm breathing and my heart is beating and my blood cells are multiplying and all my system is working so beautifully is the Lord's grace. In my opinion, even to have access to books like these and knowledge like that, you know, the Lord has showered his grace on us. At least I feel so thankful that I have this opportunity to share with all of you, because it gives me an opportunity to read it twice and think about it and prepare. And it is really, you just cannot describe how much his grace is upon us constantly. And so one has to have constantly remembrance of the Lord. Be thankful to him. Be grateful that, oh Lord, it is because of you that all these scriptures have come down. Everything has come down from his mouth. The Bible came from the words of Jesus, who is the Son of God. Quran came from Muhammad, who is a prophet. Guru Nanak, you know, Shankaracharya, Swami Chinmayananda, all these great saints and prophets have given us all this knowledge, which is directly they have acquired from the Lord. And so that's why one has to constantly, every morning, get up and thank him. And at the end of the day, thank him and remember the Lord. And then only your life will be full of love, will be full of peace. They say that Swami Chinmayananda has a very beautiful saying. He says, give your mind in love to God. Give your mind in love to God. He will purify it and return it back to you. Remember the Lord with love, and automatically your mind will become purified. Automatically all your anger and all your selfishness and all your everything will go away. Just chanting the name of the Lord. You don't need to do anything. Just remember him with love. But of course, along with that, if you have knowledge, if you read the right books and apply it, then it's much better. So that is the essence of this beautiful verse, where we find that an intelligent student who has the right prerequisites, you know, like we have prerequisites for medical school, he has the prerequisites for spirituality. He has already done that. He has already purified his mind, and then he goes to a teacher and with humility asks, how may I purify the mind? So, of course, the last one, how to remove the impurities, you'll say, you keep saying that, but we don't have time. We'll do that next week. In fact, actually, there are four verses, so it will take us 4 weeks to do that, but they are beautiful verses because it's very clear and very practical application, how to remove desire, how to remove anger, how to remove selfishness. Everything is explained very beautifully in the book. Of course, you should read it before you come, and then I'll try to expand on that. So we have time if anybody has any comments, any questions, anything they agree or disagree with.
I love the train and pray it, and how many times that you know you shouldn't be doing it, but it just tastes so good. Or
right. No, but I think awareness is the first step. See, if I don't know, I'm doing wrong. So I'll just keep on doing everything based on my whims and fancies. Oh, I just like it. I fancy it. I whim. It's my desire. It's my whim. So I never even think about it. And if I'm going on the wrong path, no one is there to tell me, especially say if I'm the boss in the office and I'm doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. No one is there to tell me or correct me. So understanding that what I'm doing is wrong is the first step. Then only I can rectify that. So if you are aware that this thing is not good for me, or this thing is not good for my company or for my factory or for my family, then awareness or knowledge is the first step. Otherwise, ignorance, you know, you will keep on doing what you're doing. You will never improve. So once you become aware, even if you have made a mistake and done something that you were not supposed to, but at least now you are a little voice in your somewhere down is saying that, wait a minute, you know, this is not right. So as you become more and more alert and spiritually progress, you will then start listening to that inner voice. And then you will start paying attention. And then the next time you are about to make that same mistake, then you will become, I got angry at somebody, but I realized that anger is not good. Previously, I used to just go around shouting at everybody, didn't care. But now I know that this is not good for me, but I still did it. But at least now I know that this time I made the mistake. Next time if that same situation arises, I will not become angry. I'll you know. So that's how. So I think definitely not knowing is worse. The knowing is little better, and then applying that is the best. So it's a stepwise progression. So I don't see anything wrong with
it. But even if you had that sentiment.
And you still did it?
Well, maybe. Maybe not.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, maybe one time you did it, but at least next time you won't. Okay. Once you have that knowledge. If you didn't, then you will keep on doing it. Like if you're going in the wrong direction, you're supposed to go east to go somewhere and you start going west. You don't have a GPS. You'll keep going for miles and miles. But then suddenly you stop somebody and ask him. And he says, you know what, I mean, I need to turn around and go back. At least then you know. Otherwise, you would keep on going. So that is the guru is that guide who tells you that you have been going in the wrong direction. You need to turn around and make a U-turn. And so I think that's why having knowledge is a good first step.
Because it wasn't too long.
Right. But guru comes to you. What our scriptures say, that when you are ready for the knowledge and your desire is strong, the nature, the consciousness will make sure that a teacher comes in your life. And then that teacher will change your life. And that's at least what happened to me when we met Swami Chinmayananda, and then all his, you know, his followers, other Swamis and Acharyas of this mission. I think that it did help me, you know, to a great extent to clarify my thinking and change to some extent the direction of my life. Not that, you know, you become 180 degrees monk or anything like that, but at least to get the right knowledge, and hopefully at least a part of that we can apply. So I actually am very grateful to the teacher. But the guru comes to you. If you have a desire, and if your desire is pure, and you want to improve, God or the nature or whatever you want to call it, the consciousness will make the circumstances suitable so you can evolve. If you want to get better, the nature contributes, or God, or consciousness, whatever you want to call it. But the whole universe then participates in your upgrowth, in your evolution. It does. I think once you are on a particular path, then it is important to choose, you know, because everybody has limited 24 hours. You know, we don't have unlimited time. So how am I going to choose my 24 hours? Certain number of hours I have to sleep, certain number of hours I have to work, and certain number of hours I need to take care of, you know, my bathing and my cooking and my... So after you remove all that, there's only two or three optional hours available in a day, maybe one, maybe two. And so how I choose to spend it is very important. If my goal is spiritual progress and Shreyas, then I have to choose my friends accordingly, my satsang. That's why they say the company of the good. Like, this is a typical example where people have gotten together because we are all interested in Shreya, in what is good for us. And so you could have been home watching the basketball game or you know, something else, but we chose to, you know, spend this hour or hour and a half together. So the idea is that, yes, so you, it's okay to avoid situations where I'm just going to waste my time, or they're going to take me away from the path, or people who are going to. So it's not that you are judging or putting people down, but I have to now think about my, again, not as a selfish person, not as my growth, but when each person evolves, he or she becomes a little lamp in their neighborhood or in their family. As you get better spiritually, your whole family situation improves and people around. So the whole society improves. That's why this one who, Transcendental Meditation, Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, he says that. He says that his goal is to spread meditation throughout the world, so that everywhere in the world, when people are meditating, they are spreading the good vibrations in their neighborhood, in their family, in their surroundings. And ultimately, the whole universe will be meditating, or at least will be uplifted. So, yeah, there is, I don't see anything wrong with choosing, avoiding like parties or where people are drinking a lot and, you know, we're just wasting their time. There's no purpose. You'd rather be, in the past, it used to happen to us, you know, because Indians, they love to party Friday and Saturday night. We have to be, you know, at somebody's house. And nowadays, if nobody invites us on Friday, in the olden days, we used to say, what happened? Nobody has invited us. So we would call somebody and take him out to dinner. Now, we say it's good. Nobody has called. That's good. We can sit home and, you know, I can walk on the treadmill, or I can study, or I can, you know, read, listen to some good talks. And after a while, they don't fascinate you that much, these things. So I don't see anything wrong with that.
I spend a lot more time alone. I've noticed that. But it doesn't bother me. That's right. Nice about it.
True. Yeah, because alone is when you can think. Alone is when you have time to think, you have time to contemplate, you have time to meditate, to apply. Yeah, there's nothing wrong. As long as you're not lonely. If you're fine being alone, that's wonderful. In fact, solitude is a great way to quieten the mind. Just sit alone for half an hour, you know, every day, make some time. But just sit quietly somewhere in your room or in your backyard, or go to a park, you know, like Hart Park, you know, where you can watch the river flow. But any place like that where you can be quiet and with nature, even just your backyard, and watch the sunset or the flowers bloom or the birds chirp, that solitude is very healing. It's very good. There's nothing wrong. It does not mean that you are something abnormal. Though, you know, at one stage we used to think, you know, being alone was a torture. But
even though your mind is always doing something, but still you...
That's true. And you could be in a group of 20 people, but if you don't fit in, you could be lonely if they all ignored you. So, yeah, that's good.